Dan Celian.
I want to be a nation that is on the biblical principles and the values and the ethics that are found in Scripture.
Your personal economy.
Financial issues that you need to know.
Aligning reality with truth.
But I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers.
Now, here's your host, Dan Celian.
Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533. You want to queue your call up, you're welcome to do it. Let me go to phones. Let me get to James. James is calling us from Arkansas. Hey, James, how are you?
Good. Good morning.
Good morning.
I've got a mix of stuff. I've got a pension. I've got my late wife's pension whenever I get to that age, 67, I think. I'm 54, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'll be 53, I'm sorry. I've also got a 401k. Okay. I've got Roth IRA. I've got standard IRA. I mean mutual funds. And I've got three stocks. And I've got, with all that, I took part of my wife's, she passed away 3 years ago, so I took part of her life insurance and put half of it in a CD because I had all these other baskets.
Sure.
And that CD is maturing at the end of this month.
Gotcha.
And it's going to roll back into my account. It's $250,000. Okay. And I'm thinking about maybe doing bonds. I don't have any bonds.
Okay.
And since I'm going to be turning 53, my window would only be about probably 10 years. Because 10 years would get my youngest through at least 4 years of college, and I can retire at 64.
Okay.
I'm wondering what, and I know there's different kinds of bonds. There's bonds, mutual bonds, bond funds, corporate bonds.
Yeah. So let me just, I'm not a huge fan of bonds right now. I think the bond environment has been bad for a couple years. I'm okay with some individual bonds, but they're very, very hard to get, very hard to find. I don't like bond mutual fund, James. I just don't like any of them. They just, if your thinking is, I want to put it in bonds because I still have the idea that I need to preserve this and I don't want to put it at risk into the markets. I want to just, I want to grow it, get a little bit more interest than I can get in a CD, but I don't want to be real risky. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah.
I would say, do you have a broker, either IRA or...
All my investments except for my pension at work and my wife's pension are in a brokerage.
Okay. And they're in one of the big brokerages, like E-Trade or TD Ameritrade, one of those?
Securian.
Okay. So,
three.
So I would go on there, and I would look to see what kind of individual bonds they have. And they should have a list and opportunities to buy individual bonds. I would not buy a bond below triple B. Frankly, me personally, I wouldn't buy anything below A. But remember, the higher grade it is, the less the return's going to be.
Okay.
But I would look at the individual bonds. Now, the thing I want to caution you on, do not look at the coupon rate. So the coupon rate on the bond is going to say, this is a 3.5% bond. And so the biggest mistake people make is they look at that and they say, 3.5%, that's pretty good. I'm going to buy that, and they buy it. They should also list, they should have a column when they talk about the bond that's going to say YTM. And it's that YTM that you care about. And that is yield till maturity. So that is the actual return that you're going to get. So it may be in a 3.5% bond, but the yield to maturity, which the maturity might be in 3 years, yield to maturity might be you know, 0.95. Well, you could do better in a CD for that. So don't just be careful if you do that, that you look at yield to maturity. That would be the same for municipal bonds, which would be a pretty good idea, or corporate bonds, government bonds as well. So be real careful when you look at that, but I would check with that. And if you talk to somebody, they're going to give you the coupon rate. So you have to say, is that the yield to maturity? Because you don't want the coupon rate. And so be real careful of that if you want to buy bonds.
I don't currently have anything. I'm going to sign up for your ministry and probably become a partner, because I want to start moving. Even though I only have 10 years, I can at least do 10 years worth of maybe having some biblically responsible investments. If I decide not to go into bonds, what else could I start looking at?
Yeah, so some of the things you're going to look at is preferreds, which act like a bond. You know, they pay a high
stock, then?
High yield. What's that? Preferred stocks.
Preferred stock.
Yep. Now I gotta run because I'm up against the ag report. If you want, I'll put you on hold, James, till the report's over, and come get back to you. So I'll put you on hold. If you gotta run, you can and call me back. But I'll put you on hold, folks. We'll be right back. Here comes Greg Haggart with our ag report. And as soon as we're done with the ag report, we have a short break. We'll be right back after that. Craig Haggart with our ag report right now. I'll be back after this.
This is Craig Haggart with your Financial Issues Ag Update. Tomorrow will bring us the quarterly stocks report as well as the annual prospective plantings report. Heading into these crucial reports, the average trade estimate is that the quarterly stocks will come in at 1.555 billion bushels for wheat, 8.335 billion bushels for corn, and 2.683 billion bushels for soybeans. The average estimate for the prospective plantings report are 91.332 million acres for corn, 86.169 million acres for beans, and 46.915 million acres for all wheat. And turning to yesterday's markets, there was very little news in the market as corn followed beans lower yesterday. The only real report out there was the weekly ethanol production report, and that showed weekly production running at 29,000 barrels per day less than last week. Production year-to-date is running 2% behind last year, while stocks are 7% higher than year-ago numbers. As I record this, the overnight spot corn futures are trading down a penny. The bean market had a tough day yesterday, with many contracts finishing over a dime lower. This was largely due to positioning ahead of Friday's report, as well as technical selling and lack of supportive news. The market was also hit by a lack of news developments coming from the U.S.-China trade war and the fact that weather concerns are starting to become less worrisome for soybeans. In the overnight trade, spot bean futures are trading 2 cents higher. Wheat managed to have a small bounce yesterday after a negative day on Tuesday. Fears that plantings will be delayed due to snowpack in North Dakota help support that market. Bulls also supported the market on the hope that exports will begin to pick up. In the overnight trade, all that bullish support seems to have disappeared, with Chicago trading down 7 cents, while Kansas City is 6 lower, and Minneapolis is down a penny. Cotton futures took a step backwards yesterday as the May futures settled down 94 points to close at 76.95. In the overnight trade, spot futures are trading down an additional 39 points. Livestock experienced a split session, with cattle futures lower while hogs posted another higher close. For the day, April live cattle finished down 65 cents, while April feeder cattle were down 32.5. Lean hogs continue to benefit from the African swine fever that is decimating the Chinese swine herds, with the April futures up $1.60 for the session. The last time spot lean hog futures were at these levels was last July. Class 3 milk futures continued to exhibit some strength. That was the case again yesterday, as April finished up 4 points, settling at 15.66. In the overnight trade, we have a little bit of slippage, with the spot futures down 5 points. In the cash markets, choice beef boxes were 52 cents lower at $2.28.99, while selects were $1.52 higher to settle at $2.20.53. In hogs, the pork...
The opening statement in the Constitution of the United States says this, that we, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. I don't know what part of that we don't get anymore. That was written by men who cared about this country deeply.
Financial Issues with Dan Celia.
Well, right now, all the indices are positive territory, up at 0.25%, but green nonetheless. It's kind of interesting. President Trump is talking about OPEC, and I mentioned that earlier this morning in the first hour. He's talking about OPEC, Saudi Arabia's Aramco, which is the largest refinery here in the United States that is owned by Saudi Arabia, is taking a stake in the kingdom's a petrochemical company. They're putting $70 billion into that. So that's interesting. And President Trump is sounding like he is pleading a little bit that it's very important that OPEC increase the flow of oil. World markets are fragile. Price of oil getting too high. I think he can plead all you want, Mr. President. It's not going to do a lot of good. They care about their economy. Remember, these are monarchies or socialist or communist regimes. They don't care a whole lot about what the world markets would like to see. And they have been dipping into their sovereign wealth funds for a very, very long time because they haven't been able to meet their budgetary requirements on the price of oil. And that's been a problem. And they have made a lot of cuts. Saudi Arabia, for instance, they could probably get by with $80 a barrel oil, but they, you know, they might not need $100 a barrel. But Russia's got to have at least $130 a barrel. They're bankrupt. They don't have any money, and they used to need $150. They're probably down to about $130. So the odds of them increasing the flow of oil probably pretty slim. And they don't really care about the fragile markets in the rest of the world. So I don't know that that's going to do a whole lot of good. It's okay to do it. But I wouldn't get too overly excited about the notion that they could cut oil. Just like we, the president of the United States, cares about the American people, they care about what is good for their people. And Saudi Arabia in a very, very difficult situation because they understand as a monarchy, they could be overthrown. And Saudi Arabia is the only successful large Arab country that has kept at bay another Arab Spring. They were able to do that, and they want to continue to do that. They don't need a social unrest situation where they're in trouble because they certainly don't want to lose power. So it's a little bit of a different situation when you're talking to them. So I don't think they're going to help us out any on oil prices. What we can do is here in the United States, what you might want to do is have a meeting with CEOs, executives of American oil companies and American refineries and talk about what we need to do here in America to try to keep oil prices, gasoline prices, consumer prices at reasonable cost and that everybody can still make money. And that might be something you want to do. And that might mean that the U.S. ramp up production, which we have capabilities to do, but it would also mean probably the government giving them some incentives to help grow and expand their transportation system because it's a huge problem. Nobody's talking about it much, but it's still a problem. They've made great strides in the last 9 months, but nonetheless, we still have a problem. All the production, in the Black Hills is a wonderful thing, but you got to get it to Oklahoma or you got to get it somewhere, and transportation is an issue. So, but that might be, we might be better served to look at some of those things to increase production here and not be too worried or asking anything of OPEC. I just got, a lot of it's just a personal bias. I just have a real problem in asking OPEC for anything. I was dancing in the streets when all of a sudden OPEC became irrelevant. And I thought it was the greatest thing to happen. They've been manipulating our markets and oil since 1970. And just the fact that now they have no control that they had, And now that they are scrambling, trying to grow an economy when all they have is sand, they can't do much about it. I mean, they're trying to get into petrochemical. They're trying to do other things, and they will diversify eventually. But they've built a massive amount of wealth on the backs of Americans. And you know what? I just struggle. I just struggle asking them for anything. I know you got to be diplomatic and in situations like this, and I get that and I understand it. I just don't like it. And so it doesn't much matter what I say because I definitely have a bias, not to mention we have the resources right here. Let's cut some of the oil we're giving to Aramco, send it to some of our U.S. refineries because they're getting the oil from Saudi Arabia, most of their oil anyway. 844-707-5533. 844-707-5533 if you want to queue your call. Let me go to Christopher. Christopher calling us from, I'm not sure where, but go ahead, Christopher.
Hey, Dan. It's Christopher in Kentucky.
Kentucky. How are you?
Yes. I'm doing well. In Kentucky, we have a lot of farm. Agriculture is a huge part of our business. And I actually wanted to weigh in on a comment. You and both Anthony commented on this in the last hour.
Yes.
Regarding actions and not what they say.
Yes.
And one of the things that they've been saying for years that just gets under my skin is they have the nerve to call their views regarding illegal immigration, you know, compassionate, and they market it like that. And when it couldn't be further from the truth. About 25% of our farm labor, which is a huge portion of our industry, is migrant workers. And when they don't come over legally, they get extorted. They don't get minimum wage. They don't get safe housing. They don't get clean drinking water. And I just find that to be a very discompassionate stance. And those who favor the rule of law and regulations, to me, that seems a more compassionate view. And I agree 100% with what you said. We need to hold them accountable for what the actions result in, not just the kind words that they're touting just to make themselves feel better about it.
Exactly. Boy, and that's a great point that you make. You know, I live in a very high migrant area. We are, our county is the mushroom capital of the world. I mean, we export mushrooms all over the world. It's a huge, huge, but it's not necessarily migrant because you grow mushrooms all year around. They're grown in mushroom houses, and so they're not impacted by the weather or anything like that. So it's a constant cycle. And, man, when you go to some of the big mushroom houses, you see the kind of conditions these, workers that are here on migrant visas, even though it is not a migrant situation, it is amazing, and there's nothing compassionate about it. There's nothing compassionate about it. So you bring up a great point that I've missed for a long time till you just brought it up, so I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. So you have another question?
No, I just
Oh, that was it. Oh, good. You just wanted to weigh in on that. Great. Well, Christopher, I sure do appreciate it. You know, it's a great point of view, and I especially love to get a point of view that is so obvious, and I didn't see. So,
you know, the families that farm here. I mean, over half of the farms in Kentucky are family farms that have less than $10,000 of profit a year, and the people who come over and help, they become part of the family. We love them. You know, we try and teach. We bring them to church. We love them with the love of Christ. And when you see the ones that come over illegally and they get extorted by certain people who are less than scrupulous, it just breaks your heart. And you realize that the policies of the left promote that rather than the compassion. And so many times the right or the conservatives or Christians are painted as, well, we just don't care about them. But when you value quality of life and good living conditions, you know, you want to support them coming over the right way.
Yeah, amen. Absolutely. That is great. I appreciate it, Christopher. Point well taken, and thank you for weighing in, and so right, and I hope everybody's paying attention. But, you know, we have got to, if we don't do anything else, we've got to be in a place where we are holding accountable actions, not holding accountable words. And, you know, for years, I'm sick and tired of these politicians, I've been saying this, going 2 months before their election, going into their districts and saying all the things that everybody wants to hear. I'm so sick and tired of it. As if when they say it, it happens. That's how sometimes the average voter votes. Instead of saying, and that's why I was talking about those 12 Republicans. You know, they all know that their mindset is nobody's going to remember that we voted with Schumer on the wall. Nobody's going to remember that. Nobody's going to remember that. And we're going to justify it. You know, well, guess what? Their justification is crumbling. So that's not going to work. But, you know, they're betting on that. They're betting that they got away with voting with Schumer because nobody is going to remember it when they go to vote. And the two that are coming up for election in 2020, they changed their vote to vote with the rest of the Republicans because they're going to have to go through an election just in less than a year or just more than a year, and they know that that's not enough time for everybody to forget. Well, for the rest of the 12, nobody's going to forget, at least on my watch anyway. I'm going to make sure that there is a constant reminder about that. Okay, let me go to, you know what, we probably ought to hold off. I know I just clicked on, we got David on deck. I was going to go there, but we're about out of time before we go to break. So let's go to break, and then we'll get right back to phones. We do have a line open, 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. If you want to cue your call up, you're welcome to do it. Also, Facebook. Don't forget, folks, welcome to all of you that are watching us on Facebook. Make sure that you cue up your question on Facebook. We'll get to that as well. I also want to remind all of you, maybe the habit is you don't log in on Facebook. You log in on financialissues.org and watch the program at FISM TV or financialissues.org. You log in and watch there because, you know, we're looking like we might be able to get back on YouTube. But I say to our IT guys, why? We're just going to be taken off again in another month because we're not going to comply with what they want us to comply with. And so we're just going to get knocked off again. So we're going to be right back in the same spot. So let's drive everybody. Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. We have a line open. If you want to queue your call up, you're welcome to do it. Let me go to David. David's calling us from Florida. Hey, David. David? All right. Okay. David, you there? All right. I'll have David. Let me go to Jackie. Jackie's calling us from Arkansas. Hey, Jackie.
Oh, God bless you.
Thank you.
Just one quick question. You've been talking about Samaritan Ministries, and yes. I've been really interested in being a partner, you know, or, you know, a member with them. What is the accountability for Samaritan Ministries versus the, you know, a typical insurance company, health insurance company, their accountability? I don't even know if they have accountability, but
yeah.
Anyway, can you speak to that regard?
No, I mean, so before I would use them myself or recommend them, I called all of them and tried to get with all of them so I could vet them thoroughly. And the only one that would let me do that was Samaritan. And I went out there. I spent some days there twice. I went out twice and spent time there. And I went through everything. And they basically said, whatever you want to do, go ahead. Go through anything you want to go through. Now, they've been around 25 years. They're one of the oldest. And so I wouldn't say, I mean, their accountability is just their, you know, everything is internal. There is no regulatory authority over them, if that's what you're wondering. There is nothing like that. There's no government agency or state agency that is a regulatory authority over them, which I think is a good thing, but nonetheless, there isn't any.
I agree.
Yeah, it's not.
I agree, but I was wondering if there was a ministerial apostolic kind of you know, governance or, well, if you will. That's
so
the only word I know to use.
There is, in the sense that everybody that is a part of that has to reaffirm every year on an application through an accountability person at their church that they are, in fact, still living a life of a Christian. So there's some accountability there. There is accountability on an individual perspective. So let's say you had a big event. You were in the hospital for a period of time, and you submit all these. So you have all your bills, you submit them. And they, so Samaritan sends you a list of the people that you should be getting checks from. And you check them off. If you don't get a check, you call Samaritan, they send you their check, and those people will lose their right to be a part of the ministry.
It's actually governing billions of dollars of funds.
Billions. Yeah,
it's a third party.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Yeah, it's 20. I mean, they're facilitating $27 million a month. So there's $27 million being sent out there every month that they're facilitating, and they track every nickel of it. They're watching it closely. They know who is supposed to give what in that $27 million to whom they're supposed to give it to. And you know, too, because you get a list, these five people you're going to get checks from, and you let them know. We've only had that happen once. But where we had said, hey, we never got the check, but they took care of it. So it is, you know, it's accountable that way, that everybody in it is living, the living right, living the Christian, in a Christian worldview.
Okay. Okay. All right. Grace is in heaven to abound.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you. I am becoming a partner. God bless.
Oh, thank you.
Bye-bye.
For that. Thank you. God bless you.
Bye-bye.
844-707-5533. Who's on deck? I lost my screen here. Cindy. All right. Let me go to Cindy. Hey, Cindy.
Hi.
Good morning.
How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
So I'm trying to assist my mom, who is a widow in her late 70s, and she's meeting with an estate planner who is advising her to roll over her 401k and her 457 into a fixed annuity.
Yes, into an annuity. I could have told you that. You wouldn't have had to tell me. how much is she worth over $8 million? We lost her. Okay, Cindy, I hope you're still listening. It is, she doesn't need an estate planning attorney unless she has a very valuable estate. So the estate would have to be fairly considerable. So I would not recommend that she spend money meeting with an estate planning attorney, number one, because it's unnecessary. Having an estate plan is going to do nothing for her because there's no benefits. Would it hurt her? No, it wouldn't hurt her other than the money it costs to set it up. But I would think about that first. Secondly, she should not be rolling over anything, all of it, into one insurance product. If she wanted to roll it all into a CD, that's one thing. I wouldn't roll it over into an insurance product. And that is just really bad advice. I think it is advice that someday will be illegal if anybody could ever get their act together in the state insurance commissions and the SEC and FINRA. But it's not the right thing to do. Somebody in their 70s has to have money that is liquid. All their money should be have a certain level of liquidity to it. The last thing she needs to do is to continue to defer income. It doesn't save any income tax. It only defers it all. So I don't believe that's the right thing. The other thing is that if she wants fixed assets, it is a far better way to do it in things that are liquid. If she wants to preserve her assets, it would be a far better thing to do to have it in a five-year CD where she can earn 4% and not have to worry about any valuations going down. And, oh, Cindy is back. Okay.
Sorry.
So I don't know if you heard what I was saying there, Cindy.
I heard bad advice and
okay.
CD.
So the question that I had was, does she need an estate planning attorney, which means she would have an estate worth about $6-8 million. If she doesn't, there's no reason to go through an estate plan. The tax, that's just a waste of money. It's not going to harm her, but it's not going to hurt her either, or help her either.
I think she was told it made it easier to set up her accounts and that kind of thing. I think that's how it was sold to her.
Okay. Well, it's really there's nothing that she doesn't have to do in establishing her accounts because of that she wouldn't have to do if she just did it on her own or did it with a financial advisor. So there's nothing she's saving there. I think it's irresponsible for anybody to recommend her. I don't care who it is. It's irresponsible. It's flat out here. It shouldn't be even legal as far as I'm concerned for anybody in their 70s, but nonetheless, it's
right.
Irresponsible.
It seems to complicate things to me, just
yeah.
Looking at it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think if her overall objective is to preserve her money
right.
and not lose any, which is fine, I don't have a problem with that, then she
right.
ought to be in, three-year CDs with that money.
Right.
And she can still
right.
keep it within the IRA so she doesn't get taxed all at once. But, and she can do it at some banks will give her opportunities to still go in and get some of that money without any penalties. It's never going to go down. She's always going to earn a little bit, and it's going to be protected. And that would be a far better thing to do because it would keep the money liquid. It would preserve the principal with no strings attached. It's going to be preserved, period. I know it says guaranteed fixed annuity. That means there may be an interest rate that is guaranteed. Is the principal guaranteed, and will they put that in writing? And is the... And will they put that in writing? If they put it in writing, that's fine. They won't put it in writing. I know they won't, because that's not... So it's not legal for them to put it in writing because it's not factual. So, but it is the way they're sold, and I understand that. I have much bigger problem with the selling practices of these than I do the product themselves. So I would recommend that she doesn't do that. Stick with CDs if she wants to preserve her money, which is an admirable thing to do. Stick to CDs. Long as the CDs are an IRA account, so she can go to her bank, open up an IRA, and put it in CDs. And that's fine. But don't let the bank talk her into an annuity either. They see dollar signs
right.
when they see all that money. So stick to CDs.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome, Cindy. Thank you. 844-707-5533. We're going to go to break. We're going to get back to phones. We've got a line open, 844-707-5533. And we'll get back to phones. By the way, Facebook, if you've got a question you want to put on Facebook, we'll get to that. So... we would love for you to go ahead and put your question up on Facebook. If you like, we have a number of questions up there. We'll get to those. So we hope that...
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533. If you want to queue your call up, you're welcome to do it, 844-707-5533. We got another hour and 10 minutes. Cue your call up, and we'll get to your calls. Let me go to David. David's calling us from Florida. Hey, David.
Hey, how you doing, Dan?
Good.
I have quite a few questions here, probably like five or six, but I'm going to rapid fire them to you.
Okay.
I'm a new partner. I'm getting started very late in the game. I'm 52, and I just started my Timothy plan, and I did the model Class A in Timothy plan, and I currently have about 20,000 in there. Now, if I'm able to max this out every year until I'm 65, I hear you telling people you'll be in great shape. What does that mean exactly? I mean,
well,
can
I
expect to have,
yeah,
you know,
what that means is that if you're maxing it out every year and you've got 10 or 12 years, you're going to do okay. It's going to come up. You know, you're going to have more money. You're going to have bad year. You're going to have down years. You're going to have up years. But you're going to have more up years than you have down years. That's what I believe, if you have a good diversified plan. So the key to Timothy is that if you're maxing it out, you're doing it on a monthly basis, you know, as opposed to a yearly basis. So the key is that you will put money in as often as you can. And, you know, that would be my recommendation to make sure that you're taking advantage of your situation the best way you can.
I have a set amount of money that is broken up to where on April 15th I will max out, and it goes in every single Monday. That's the way I have it set up.
So it's going in every Monday, every week you're putting money in.
Right.
Yeah, gotcha. That's great.
And it's automatic. You know, it's automatically set up that way.
Great. Perfect. Perfect.
So when you say I'll be in great shape, I mean, can I expect like $250,000 in there?
Oh, well, I don't know that. If I knew that, I can't predict what the markets are going to do. You might have $1 million. You might have, 20%. You might have 20% over what you started with, or you might have, 50% or 10% or whatever. I mean, I don't know. It's really going to depend. It's all subject to markets. So make no mistake about it. That's all subject to how well the markets do or don't do. And it's too hard to predict. I make an assumption, because if you go back to any 10-year period of time, that you are going to outperform anything that you would do otherwise more conservative, like CDs. So you're going to far outperform that. To what extent, though? All you can do is look at past performance. You can't look ahead.
Okay, so I'm using your buy list to buy some stocks. How many sectors should I have? How many stocks in each sector, and what's the sufficient amount of stocks to have in for each company?
Well, for
a beginner, for someone who's just beginning.
Yeah, so the sectors are on the asset allocation model. So how many, whatever, there's your sectors there. So that's how many. You shouldn't skip any, if that's what you mean. You should have those sectors. How many stocks you have in each sector, in each category? I would say a minimum of 3, a maximum of 5.
Okay. All right. I heard you tell somebody the other day to go on your website and you could punch in letters to see if any stock is biblically responsible. I looked all on the website. I didn't see where you could do that.
If you're buying a stock off my list, you don't need to do that.
Right.
If you're not following along with our asset allocation model, then on the front page of the website, you just scroll down a little bit as soon as you get on there, and you'll see a thing that looks like a spokes of a wheel on the right, and it says screen your investment. Kind of hard to miss. It's right there on the right-hand side as you scroll down the front page.
Okay. It's a wheel? Okay. All right. Okay, and what about dividends? When do you take dividends? I mean,
well,
do they sit there? If you don't take them, do they sit there, or do they disappear, or what?
Well, I Are you talking about mutual funds or stocks?
Either or.
Well, mutual funds, are you, did you check it? Are you reinvesting those dividends?
I don't.
Okay, well.
No, I don't know.
So you should be reinvesting those dividends in the mutual funds. And in the stocks, you can't reinvest them. They're going into your money market account. And then as they build up, buy some more stock with them.
Okay. How do you know when is when to switch to an income portfolio? What's the difference between an income portfolio and...
You switch to income when you're ready to take income and you need it. If you don't need it, okay. If you don't need it, you shouldn't have income.
Okay. All right. I think that... Is Roku biblically responsible?
No.
No? Okay. All right. All right, well, I appreciate it.
All right, thank you, David.
I appreciate your ministry. It's incredible. So,
well, thank you so much. I thank you for your partnership. Sure, appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Yep.
All right, let me go to Randy calling us from Louisiana. Hey, Randy.
Hi, Dan. So I'm fascinated to learn this even exists. I was been a tither since I was a very young man. For Malachi, I took God up on his challenge. And I tell you, 40 years later, he's been faithful.
Wow.
I've been blessed for it. So I'm 60, just a couple years away from retirement. I've met with some big-name brand people locally and then tuned into your site, and I was completely oblivious to being biblically responsible with investments. I don't know why, but I just never really heard or thought of it that way. So.
Yeah.
I am clearly going to be involved with what you do and some of those strategies, but I guess here's the deal. If whether I go with 62 or 3 or 4 or whatever, I'm not pressed to do it. But when I do, I would likely, between my 401k and pension, I would immediately begin sprinkling it across some of the investments that you would suggest, and I would be investing probably maybe $2.5 million. The issue is, I have a special needs person who lives with me and will forever. So what I do with these investments needs to outlive both me and my wife to supply for her.
Yes.
Is that, I guess, feasible, practical with that sum of money?
I would say it's very, very feasible. And I would even go so far as to say it should be easy to obtain that. Now, I'm assuming that you live a relatively conservative lifestyle and you're living within your means, and you should be able to continue to do that without too much trouble. But one of the things you want to make sure, and you've probably been told this already, is you have to have a special needs trust. Because you need to make sure that your will or your trust or anything else that you have that is leaving funds for this person
should not leave it.
Oh, you have that. Okay. So as long as you have a special needs trust and that's, you know, that's written properly, you should not have any trouble. There is no reason in the world that kind of money is not going to consistently provide you with a good dividend, a good income. And there's no reason that income that it provides you with should be dipping into principal at all. You should be able to do that without dipping into principal without any problem. So if that is the case, when you go to our website, you know, whenever it is you retire and you're looking like you're ready to roll this over, you would primarily be looking at the income portfolio. And I would suggest to you, I don't like saying this because who knows what I'd say 2 years from now with the market's conditions and such, but it seems like an ideal situation for you would be that you would have roughly about 70% of that money in an income portfolio, and the other 30% you would probably have in a more conservative growth portfolio. So you'd probably split it up and have two portfolios. And I think that would serve you really, really well when you get to that point. But you shouldn't have any trouble doing that unless you want this, you need this money to produce, you know, a 13-14% yield every year in order for you to, keep going. And at that time, if that were the case, then you'd be dipping into principal during some of those down years in all likelihood. And then you could see that threatened a bit.
I guess. No, our intent would obviously live as conservatively as we can. But at the same time, it's just important that it outlasts us.
Yes.
Not be a burden for others.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I don't think you have any problem doing that. I really don't.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dan, for what you do. And
you're welcome, Randy.
Thank God.
I thank you for your heart and wanting to start to align your investments to honor God. And, man, I thank you for that. That's what we're here for. I sure do appreciate it. All right, folks.
Thank you.
Welcome. I hope you have a wonderful day. If you got to leave us, but more financial issues coming up right after this. If you've got to go, have a wonderful day. God bless.